the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to number 102, the flagship RIP number 102 here on the CBP, on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here with Len, as always, in the other panel. Sir, what a week we've had in corn news. We got some crashing, some burning, some clown world, lots to discuss today. How you doing over there?
Oh, I'm wonderful, Joey. Yeah, it's a really eventful week. There have been some weeks in the past last 102 episodes where it hasn't been very much to report on, but this week's rather different, and it's going to be fun to talk about what's happened. And you know what? Now that we're on this topic, Joey, we're getting, yeah, let's do that. I don't want to say what it is, but let's do that. Anyways, what I was trying to say is we're almost 2 years into this. Our 2 year anniversary is coming up.
Yeah.
Imagine that. I saw an interesting tweet today from Fountain saying most podcasts don't get past the second or third episode. Man, we're going to be at 103 next episode. So I think we surpassed that and beyond. So yeah, good for us.
I'm hyped, man. I'll just say a couple things here in the housekeeping side of things. I know, I assume you have some boosts. So a few things here. I want to make a note before we get into the sponsors that, Mario Gibney, who is the co-founder of AIGS, the AI ethics board in Canada, he wants everyone to know that AIGS is actively soliciting donations and support from Canadians and from other people, I guess. I wouldn't normally bring this up on the show, but I really was left with like a fair bit of concern after that episode and after some of the research I did leading up to that episode about general AI and the fears associated with developing that kind of tech. The reason that I wanted to bring this up as well is because they're accepting Bitcoin donations. So if you want to give in Bitcoin and help push that mission forward as well, you can do that on AIGS.ca, I believe is the website. You can Google it. The work they're doing is critical, and we're going to need that work to be well-rounded and to have some form before it's needed, unfortunately. And this is part of that thing. So part of that mission. So make a point of going there, listen to that episode, see what Mario's up to on his Twitter feed. You can always check. And if you're interested in AI, reach out to him. I know he's got open DMs and he's always been very helpful to us when we want to find stuff out. So that's one thing. Before I pass it back to you, Len, a few other things. Check out last week's episode with Matt Odell, which we did here. I did here on this feed. Very good. Matt's a great Bitcoiner. And I think that I may actually go to Nashville to see Bitcoin Park. Him and I were talking a bit after the show, and I'm interested in going. And it would be nice to meet him and meet some of the other great Bitcoiners that have been through there. The hallowed halls of the former Florida-Georgia Line recording studio, now turned Bitcoin Park. Len and I started releasing for Axis of Easy, the Axis of Easy audio companion, the podcast companion to the weekly article on tech and privacy. Pretty well received. It's getting a lot of plays on our feed. I'm sure it's getting a lot of plays on the Axis of Easy feed. And I'm happy to see that people have enjoyed the sort of rebirth of that audio compendium. It's been good. And I'm looking forward to doing it again this week, probably on Thursday afternoon, and it'll release Thursday or Friday. So keep that up. Keep looking at that. We were on another podcast, Soy and Ree's Decentralized Space, which was a fun about hour long interview that we gave to those two guys. A little bit off the beaten path for us, but it was a lot of fun anyways. And then I will be on Money Talks with Mike Campbell this week. I think I'm going to talk to him Friday afternoon, and that episode will release the usual Friday night, Saturday morning, Eastern time. So look out for all of that. And continue to support the CBP. We are growing, and people seem to want to talk to us more, which is great. And it's all, you know, at least in part, thanks to you guys supporting us on Twitter and the feeds and all that. So yeah, we appreciate it and keep it up.
No, I'm going to call an audible here. Mario Gibney from AIGS. I just sent him a message on Twitter. Hopefully he replies back. I asked him if he has a Fountain account. If he does, then what I'm going to do for the next week or so, I'm going to direct all boosts that come into us directly to him. And if he doesn't have a Fountain account, I'll just do the math myself and just send over whatever people send to us. I prefer to have it automated, and that's this way it's easy for me to deal with it. If not, one way or another, whatever you stream in for the next 7 days, it's going to be directly sent over to Mario's team at AIGS. So that's what I'm going to be doing. That's number one. Number two, Joey, we have some boosts I want to get through. I want to just run them down. Joey's Achilles, by the way, your Achilles has been very he's been there a lot. I got to just say, like, for whatever reason, he's talking a lot on the boosts. Thank you to the Achilles out there for all the boosts in the comments. So number one, he says about Matt Odell, this was a great interview. Joey asked some insightful questions pertaining to BTC and privacy for someone who only knows about trading and staking ETH. Second Breakfast says, love Odell, makes learning about how to protect your privacy approachable.
Great name, Second things, Breakfast.
And actual things we can do to protect our sensitive data. And he also writes in, try out something like Phoenix or Breeze instead, both non-custodial. This is with respect to wallets. Doug and Drope or something like that. It's a love listening to Odell. I only wish I was cool enough to one day be able to consider him a friend with respect to Odell. But also thanks for that not being an issue with either Joey or Len. So apparently we are not cool, and it's easy to get friends, become friends with us. Very
literally easy. Answer damn near almost every DM that I get. So yeah, pretty easy.
Let's see what else we got here. Dallas W. E. Smith just signed up for Noster. It's not too bad of a learning process. 100%. Check it out if you haven't already done so. Big PV to everybody out there that does use Noster. Joey's Achilles, a couple of them. Wow, literally interviewing the man who created the app. When you get boost from, and look who's not here again. Shake my head, not surprised. I'm only here for Len anyways. This is with respect to my interview with Oscar Mary. And another time he writes in, congrats to the man, the myth, the legend, Adrenaline, on 100 episodes. Also, good luck, Joey, to episode 60 or something. At least you made it to most of them. Joey's Achilles, I don't know, for whatever reason, he's writing it a lot. They're all fire. I laugh when I see him write another one. So thank you very much, Mr. Achilles, and the rest of you who provided boost to us. That's it.
We should mention you were doing the interview this week. Who are you doing it with?
Bill, and this is he's doing a similar to like the Bitcoin Beach initiative in the Philippines. And these type of projects, I absolutely love them. When you're trying to roll out something to help out a number of people out there that are suffering hardships as a result of the local economy, but also as a result of your local currency getting wrecked, giving them hope and the opportunity to use Bitcoin and to use it for purchases, hold on to it, or trade it for US dollars, whatever it may be. I love these types of stories, and I will talk about them anytime somebody approaches us with one of these stories. So yeah, we'll be talking to Bill 7 p.m. Eastern on this Wednesday.
So we got that one this Wednesday. Next week is Steve Saretsky. And then, no, sorry, next week is not Steve Saretsky. Next week is Francis Puyo on the 15th, 7 p.m. And then after that, it's Saretsky on the 22nd. And then after that, I don't know. I forget who else is on the calendar. But yeah, so three good weeks coming up at least. And after that, we'll keep giving you three more good weeks at a time. Yeah, that's about all we can guarantee. Week.
Yeah. You know what, Joey? With that, I'm done with the housekeeping items.
Let's hit it.
Price of Bitcoin.
It is. Hold on. I got it. I got it. It's $22,407 US.
Yeah, you just had to look behind me. You know, my block clock was. You had a 1 in 3 chance to see that because it goes off the three different things where it rhymes off. In Canadian dollars, $30,523, still above the $30,000 threshold in Canadian dollars. But wait, let's go on, talk about what's news this week. Let's start off with the Bitcoin related news, Joey. And do you want to start off with the bankless stuff? Do you want me to go right into this, or do you want me to wait for
it? We should talk about it. Bankless, one of those two soy boys, neither of whom have ever probably even squatted 135, let alone two wheels, was like shaking and damn near crying, talking about how at a meetup he disclosed to his closest friends, probably over a couple of margaritas or something, whatever the fuck those guys are drinking at meetups, that a number of Wells notices went out to DeFi companies, groups, teams, whatever, in the space. Wells notices are basically SEC notices that are an intention to sue you unless you can tell us why we shouldn't, which basically means you're going to be shut down in your current state of affairs. So I should mention before you talk about this, and if you have some detail, I'm sure you do, you always do. I should mention that he since clawed back that comment a little bit, yes, saying that he was misinformed, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say it. I don't know if you feel the same way. I don't buy it. I think what happened is those teams were like, hey, idiot, you got a huge platform. We can't afford to have this stuff going around. It affects the price of the token, blah, blah, blah. And we don't want you talking about it. So claw it back. This is what happens in a centralized environment. People are worried about the price of their bags. And so what do? They do everything they can to rug the people who are buying the token, the external quote unquote shareholders. They are shareholders, by the way, they're issuing securities. So, you know, that what they do is they try and pull back the commentary that's negative for the price. And this is what you get. Like, I don't believe for a second that that guy who was almost in tears, Len, on his own show, suddenly has a moment where he's like, oh yeah, I was wrong. I was misinformed. He said it twice during the episode, by the way. I listened back to that whole segment. He says it twice. That once he says, like, there's problems brewing, blah, blah, blah. The second time, they actually call Gary Gensler, like smash everything, break everything, Gary or something like
Gary
that.
Gary the entire Destroyer.
Episode. Yeah, exactly. So, like, they you really telling me that this guy was wrong about that entire thing? Come on. I don't believe that for a second.
So let's just recap this. Bankless is a podcast, which I'm not exactly sure what is the premise of that podcast. I tried listening to one episode at the request of Joey. I only got just slightly past the ad read, and I stopped it after that, and I couldn't go any further. It would just the ads alone drove me absolutely bonkers. And like you mentioned, they were talking about that a bunch of DeFi founders slash companies or whatever, they got the dreaded Wells notice. And the Wells notice is, it's a pre-rug action. Let's be honest. This is essentially what it is. It's a three-step process. The first thing is you grab the rug. The second thing is you yank it out from under you. The third step is you cry like a whining bitch. And I think it hasn't yet done the first two steps, but right now they're crying like whiny bitches. So the SEC, they're going to be doing some sort of enforcement action against these DeFi founders slash companies. And I think it's time for the CBP, Joey, to create a new shirt. We could call it the your shitcoin got Wellsed, because it just makes sense. If they're all going to get it, we might as well capitalize it over here at the CBP. But the host, as you mentioned, was indeed backtracking. He wrote a very, very lengthy Twitter tweet, whatever, and it exceeded the normal, I don't know what the character limit is on Twitter, 240 characters or whatever the fuck it is. It exceeded it. I don't know how he was able to do it, but he did. He was saying that his source.
You can do it with Blue. Twitter Blue lets you put out more than that many characters now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. I was not aware of that. So he was saying, according to his sources, that he got the idea of a Wells notice carpet bomb was generally on target. The concentration of timing as a recent thing was a miscommunication. He says the source in question alluded to months plus a long time frame, and it also referred to the Wells notices already are publicly known. They were mentioning Gary the Destroyer, as I mentioned. I don't know if they used that term on the podcast, but certainly it was used on Twitter, which is funny because until now he hasn't done anything. It's been the SEC has been on the sidelines just watching everything play out in front of them, and still it doesn't look like they've done anything. So you're just trash talking somebody that has yet to enforce anything. Maybe Wells notices have been given, but we don't have anything specific. Lido, he was saying, doesn't deserve to be focused on specifically here, saying after checking in with other sources, it seems generally assumed that there are Wells notices out that are unannounced, but it's impossible to tell how many or how recently they have been served. No fucking shit. But it clearly looks like he's been talking to people. He's got the word, but the cat is now out of the bag. I think it's now time the Bankless podcast should be renamed to the Valueless podcast, because this is all they're going to be giving us moving forward. And on the term of valueless, we could talk about Binance US. And this is one where an SEC official this past week has said that this is an unregistered securities exchange. This is very damning words from somebody higher up in the SEC. They say that the staff believe that the sale of VGX tokens by Voyager Digital violated federal security laws, and Binance US is now looks like involved with the purchasing of the whatever's left, the carcass of Voyager Digital after they declared bankruptcy. And they say with respect to the VGX tokens, the offering and sale of them has been attributed to a security transaction or securities transaction. So there you go. And So Binance US is under the radar of the SEC, but Binance as a whole, the parent company, the one we all know and love or hate, they have admitted to Bloomberg that for a certain period of time, they have failed to maintain a clear one-to-one backing of its wrapped B assets in a segregated and transparent manner. We talked about this in previous episodes. Well, it's possible they're saying that the funds backing or the BUSDC, that's a wrapped version of USDC, Circle's USDC. Wrapping a USDC, I don't know. This is really getting complicated for me. Anyways,
Nothing is ever better wrapped, okay? I'll tell you that for
well,
sure.
Well, this is from tahinis. I guess that's the only place I would say for sure. But they're saying all this wrapped garbage, they were loans to counterparties that were otherwise put at risk. And Binance is not disputing that some of the money, in fact, or assets they had, was sent to Alameda for reasons I'm not aware of. This is before Alameda has toppled. The rehypothecation has occurred. It looks like it's likely to have happened. And so there's a lot of red flags here. Paxos is also being sued by the SEC, and Paxos is linked to BUSDC. Binance took a haircut on the FTT tokens that they had at the very, very end. Look, Binance is a closed book thing. Like, you don't really know what's going on over here. It's really unclear what's going on. There is smoke here. Can't say there's a fire, but you know what? I've been saying for a little bit of time now that Binance may be potentially in danger, and who knows what's going to happen moving forward. But one thing is for certain, to really nail Binance to the cross, you have to line up a lot of pieces and do a coordinated attack. This is the biggest exchange that we know in history. So in order for this one to topple, it requires a lot of ammunition to be thrown at it. We'll see what happens. But one thing that did happen is Silvergate this past week got absolutely wrecked with respect to their stock price. And one day, in fact, their stock price plunged 45%. And this is even keeping the White House, people over there are rather concerned, and they're monitoring the situation. KGP was saying that, the White House is indeed watching this. That seems rather interesting because Silvergate is not a really large bank, and they deal with primarily lending out
money. They're only known for one thing. They're known for one thing, and that's it. They're the crypto bank. That's what they do.
And in the grand scheme of things, it's rather small. But to have the White House look into this and KGP talking about this on one of the briefings,
they're not looking into trains or balloons. Certainly, they have a couple of people with some looking into time, don't you think? We can pull a couple of guys off the trains to look into Silvergate. Can we not?
Are they trained in order to? It doesn't really matter.
Off the rails.
We'll give them the pamphlet. They can read up on that. And they're good up to speed. But really, like Silvergate, they lent out a lot of money in the past little while. I think last year, in fact, they lent out initially $100 million to Marathon. And then Marathon doubled down and borrowed a second $100 million. That's just one company. So $200 million was borrowed from Silvergate. Silvergate is going to be, or they have already said, they're going to be delaying their 2022 filings. This is according to the SEC. And now payments or receiving payments have been stopped by Coinbase, Galaxy Digital, Paxos. So there seems to be a lot of moving parts here, and a lot of money is not going to be flowing in and out of Silvergate moving forward. And they say that, according to their website, effective immediately, Silvergate Bank has made a risk-based decision to discontinue the Silvergate Exchange Network. All of the deposits-related services remain operational. Look, Silvergate, I'm going to say this. It was an experiment that needed to have been tried. Unfortunately, it failed, or it's failing, and it looks like it will fail. But this goes to show you applying fiat-like mentality to the Bitcoin world just does not apply. Eventually, you're going to get wrecked, especially with the volatility that goes along with Bitcoin. So this experiment was needed, but there's no need for this moving forward. It just doesn't make sense unless you're going to be extremely conservative in your approach, but it's never the case. Whenever you have a bull market, people tend to throw caution to the wind, and here we go. But enough about Silvergate. Another one I'm going to be very brief here, but NYDIG. I think this is another one I suspect
me. Tell me about this. This is a theory you've been tossing around in a couple of group chats, and I want to hear about this.
No, I don't have much else to say. I think they're going to be collateral damage here. And if Silvergate falls, let's be perfectly honest, this is going to be monumental. If Binance falls, again, that's even going to be bigger. NYDIG is, they're on shaky ground as it is, in my opinion. If those two fall, or one of the two falls, NYDIG is next. And this is going to have just a domino effect. And what we've experienced in the past year since Luna collapsed about, I don't know, 10, 11 months ago, while we're probably going to be experiencing this moving forward for the next little while. I could be wrong. This is just all my what's in my gut, and it's been wrong many, many times moving forward. But wow, we could just move on. The Russian government, this is really cool. They're going to be subsidizing Bitcoin mining operations in Siberia, and they're going to be providing tax incentive. This is a new $12 million mining center that's going to be opening up in East Siberia, and it'll be opened up in the first half of 2023, run and operated by BitRiver, which is a Russian company. And there's going to be broad sentiment incentives, such as zero land and property taxes and a lower income tax rate, and electricity prices will be cut in half for the mining operator. I like this. And if you have stranded energy, which I assume they do have in East Siberia, like where else are you going to be using that energy? There's not much else you could do besides lumber mills and who the hell knows what's over there. Might as well use it to mine Bitcoin. Just transporting energy over long distances is a huge waste. And yeah, it just makes sense to do so. So Russia's getting involved, at least providing incentives to get involved with the Bitcoin mining business. Joey, ETH. I know we don't tend to talk about all that much in the show, but next week the Shanghai release comes out March 14th. It's Tuesday next week, and that's going to allow for the unstaking of the staked assets. I did some research. From what I could tell, somewhere between 5 and 6% of the overall ETH in circulation is staked. So it's a significant, measurable, massive, probably not, but it's still it's a decent amount of ETH that's locked up that potentially could be unlocked moving forward. Zappo Bank. It's a private bank. It's headquartered in Gibraltar. It's a very small bank or medium-sized bank. Interestingly enough, they're integrating Lightning Network, and they're going to allow customers to pay instantly for small dollar purchases up to $100 with any vendor accepting Lightning payments. And this is without suffering high transaction fees and blockchain confirmation wait times. Their goal is to close the gap between finance and crypto. And they're also going to be soon offering rates where you could earn interest in your Bitcoin. I don't want to talk about that too much, but really in terms of spending it on Lightning and with other vendors, it's a gimmicky thing right now. Because let's be honest, real world uses is probably rather limited. There's not too many vendors out there that accept Bitcoin. It's rather small in number, but it does show that the possibilities moving forward. And I will say that if there's any kinks in the system, it's a good time to get rid of them now before there's wider scale adoption of Bitcoin moving forward. And Block said they're going to be issuing or using their own Bitcoin reserves to provide liquidity to the Bitcoin Lightning Network. This has been a lot of praise from this news. This is probably going to help out with the scaling out of Lightning itself, but they're not the only ones that do this. Liquid FinTech, LQWD, they do this, and they're publicly traded. So there's another company out there that does it, publicly traded at that exact same thing. They're providing liquidity for the Lightning Network. And I'll leave it on one last thing. U.S. Senator Cynthia Lummis is going to be introducing an updated Bitcoin bill next month. What it entails, I do not know, but keep your eyes peeled for that. I'm curious to see what it's all about.
Can't wait to find out. You left out something there that was like kind of coming across the wire maybe an hour or two before we started. FTX is suing GBTC for $9 billion tied up in the two trusts. In the Bitcoin and the Ether and the Ether trust. So okay, that's another kind of contagion thing. If there's one thing courts like to do, it's make sure that assets are distributed to the people to whom they are owed during a bankruptcy proceeding. And it's interesting that FTX is going after Grayscale. Grayscale obviously has been in some trouble already because people are speculating they don't actually have all the Bitcoin they say they have. And they've been rehypothecating it and doing other suspicious things to try and keep their margins up. Fine. I don't know. You also didn't mention another big loan that Silvergate is involved in. In March 2022, MicroStrategy took out $205 million from Silvergate to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's 2025, I think it matures. So,
yeah. I mean, that's another kind of, you know, just another interesting MSTR has a lot of ways to buy Bitcoin. We've talked about the convertible notes many times on this show. We've had, you know, guys smarter than us, SB from OCanada, giving us like a breakdown on how these convertible notes work, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is Silvergate, to your point about contagion, is everywhere in crypto. They're everywhere. all these tokens that needed financing, that need loans, that need liquidity, that's where they go. They go to Silvergate Bank. And who knows what that loan book looks like now. But, you know, if not filing your 10K, again, like you and me talk about like the steps of a rug pull earlier, right? You mentioned the steps of a rug pull in the banking sector, or like in the financial reporting sector, not filing your 10K, probably pretty far along the rug pull roadmap. I'm pretty sure. So to have that happen, I'd be very concerned. The Binance thing, look, Tether was in the news earlier this week because they falsified a bunch of different financial statements over the last 2 years or 3 years.
No. Oh,
so man. I know. That's and so shocked. Like, yeah, you and me both, right? Really big surprise there. You know, but the point of the matter there is that's a huge chunk of crypto liquidity. Whether you like it or not, it's a huge chunk of Bitcoin price support. And whether we like it or not, that's going to be a big, big target on the back of the entire industry, crypto and Bitcoin. They will lump those two things together when that token eventually goes belly up. And I don't see how it doesn't go belly up, unfortunately. I know I've been pretty supportive of Tether over the years, but for them to falsify financial statements, that's pretty severe. And to get caught doing so, as opposed to admitting it or going back and editing reports or whatever you would do in that situation to try and wash your hands of it. But they didn't do anything. Their defense was basically that, well, it happened a few years ago, but we're not doing it now. Well, you know, that's not really enough. It doesn't matter when you did it. You know, you do the crime, you do the time, as they say. So interesting stuff, man. A lot of people in this chat and on Twitter talking about the price action last Friday, you know, quick, basically 5% flash crash for no reason other than, I don't know, the Silvergate news. I guess that was it, right? Something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a good time to be a Bitcoiner. My DCA is rolling. I've been using a number of different services. We're not sponsored by any of those services, so I'm not going to talk about them, but you can check my Twitter page to see what I've been using. And I got to say, man, this is a good time. Like Matt was saying last week, think about what's going to happen if the clamps start to come down. They're playing whack-a-mole already on the fiat side, right? Kind of taking down banks and different liquidity providers, making sure that these industry players can't get money. Even Coinbase, right? Coinbase presumably could go almost anywhere for liquidity. They were with Silvergate up until last week. What does that tell you? It tells you there's not a lot of better options out there, unfortunately. So anyway, Len, in the CBP first here, you and me are going to complete a soft landing in the middle of the show. Since we didn't do the Easy DNS sponsor read, we are sponsored by Easy DNS. We like Easy DNS. We're working on our website. Actually, the Carranza brothers just sent us our headshots that we took when we were doing their podcast a little while ago, because my wife demanded that we get proper headshots done. She doesn't want us to take screenshots of the videos that we're in for the website. So I'm going to write a little blurb about me and Len, and we're going to put it on the about page pretty soon. And I hope, fingers crossed, man, by the end of this month, we'll have an Easy DNS website hosted, ready, and looking for visitors. You know, that's you guys, if you weren't sure. Also, Len, the reason we like Easy DNS, we like Mark a lot, of course. But on top of liking Mark, it's about the principles of being uncancelable, right? We say a lot of things on this show that probably a lot of people disagree with, and certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, people have been canceled for less or deplatformed for less, maybe not canceled, but deplatformed for less, talking about inflation, the death of the dollar, the sort of shortcomings of policymakers, et cetera, et cetera. But we're not worried about that with Easy DNS. And one of the reasons we moved from corporate GoDaddy to Easy DNS, in addition to it being very easy and Mark and his team basically handholding us through the process, is that I don't have to worry about what we write. I started writing articles last week with the episode, and I'm going to keep saving them, and we're going to post them all. And some of them are not going to be that friendly to certain individuals. Some of them are going to be very critical of different countries and things of this nature. But I think it's important, and I think you guys think it's important. And for us, it's about making sure that content goes up and there's not a problem, because we are offering our opinions on things that matter to us in our day-to-day lives, and, you know, in Len's case, matter to his children and, you know, the future generations as well. So we're excited to be working with Mark and Easy DNS, and we hope to give him a look if you're looking to host a website or get some other hosting support. That's your guy.
And just a couple of things I just want to touch on. I didn't know that FTX was getting or suing GBTC. That's really interesting news.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure what's going to transpire from all that. It's probably just going to hold up things longer in court, given the bankruptcy hearings with FTX. And I'm going to just rehash Binance. I have been questioning their liquidity balance, that they're backed one-to-one. Remember, there's the BUSD is humongous. Billions of dollars is the market cap. Do you think they really have it's backed one-to-one with US dollars? I don't know. And similarly, then USDT or Tether, I've always questioned that too for the past while. And like you, I put away I basically discounted any FUD for some time, but lately for the past few months, no.
It's getting worse.
I've been fanning the flame of anything. I don't think that they have, they claim that they have some bonds, they have some treasuries, and I don't know. I suspect something is up over there. That, and if they're submitting fraudulent documentation, if that's not a telling sign something's up, that's fucked up. And yeah, Silvergate, one thing for certain, they're not funding the CBP. But one thing you could do, I'm wondering, not financial advice, but just like getting a student loan in the United States and taking that to buy Bitcoin, because you never have to repay back. Maybe so, same thing with Silvergate. Take some money from Silvergate, use that to buy Bitcoin. You may never have to pay that back. Not financial advice. If the opportunity exists, might as well capitalize on it. But NYDIG, I didn't elaborate too much. A lot of their loans that they're getting out there, the collateral they're using is ASIC. So when they go out, when somebody borrows money, they do so. So I'm just going to name a company that they may not be borrowing from them. So it's Bitfarms. Bitfarms borrows money from NYDIG. So they get $100 million and they go ahead and use that money to buy S19s. And then so it's collateralized against the S19s. But the problem with this is that the ASICs themselves, over time, they get devalued, but it's suffered a massive crash as a result of the price of Bitcoin. So a lot of these loans were given at a time when Bitcoin was 60,000, 50,000, even 40,000. And it cost way more money to buy an S19 than it is right now. So the collateralized loan itself, it's worth pennies on the dollar. So if NYDIG is going to be forced to start repossessing or trying to do something with these loans, they don't have the ability to be backed one or get the money one-to-one. They're going to take pennies on the dollar moving forward. And that's going to be, you can't run a business like that. So that's partially why I think NYDIG is in trouble. So it's just, it's another domino that may fall. We'll see what happens moving forward,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. It's the worst, you know, there's not a worse cocktail. I just wrote in the chat here. There's not a worse cocktail for a loan. You took the loan at the worst possible time against the worst possible collateral and the worst possible time for the collateral as well. It's all bad. Those loan books are going to sour. The question is, when are we going to find out about it? And that I think is the only question left. It's not if, it's just when.
I see that Boomer's talking with the Singaporean dollar. We got to do some sort of
we're starting a new feed. I told you, new Singapore dollar feed every Wednesday. We just look at the chart for 15 minutes and that's it.
I want to see the TA on that. Let's go to Clown World News. And there seems to be some growing tensions between the United States against China / Russia. And Blinken was talking this past week, but even the past few weeks, seeing that China's sending aid over to Russia. Well, that's something that is going to be perceived to be a no-no, according to the U.S. officials. And how would they potentially react? The U.S. would? Well, they're saying maybe sanctions could be one of the things that maybe they could put into place here. How the fuck could they sanction China? I took a look to see how much imports the United States imported from China. 2021, I know this might be a little bit outdated, 2021, but $2.8 trillion worth of goods were imported from China in the year 2021. That is a massive number. If they're going to be sanctioning anything, man, it's going to create some longer shortages, or supply chain shortages. Right now, they worked themselves out, given what's happened in the 2020 closure of the economies and all the hangover from that. Now you're going to throw in potentially sanctions on top of that. I don't think it's possible. It's a toothless measure. I don't think they'll be able to do anything. But the U.S. are saying that they're preparing new rules that will prohibit some American investment in China. And they're saying it's an effort to limit China's ability to acquire technologies that can improve their military prowess. It looks like there's some IP
Sabotage. Is it not a little late for this? Like, am I dreaming? Like, what are we talking about? It's too late, man. It's too late. Well, like, this is obvious.
Okay, I don't say it's too late. Like, you would probably say that the horse has already left the barn. I will say that it's not really that's the best analogy. I would say that there's still more IP to be stolen, and stopping this right now. I guess it's never too late, right? It's like the best time to plant a tree is yesterday. The second best time is today. So let's do it today and then start.
When
from
is
there,
Blinken going to say that on the podium? We gotta place a bet on that. Like over under 1.5 months, Blinken makes the tree planting analogy on the podium.
He's never going to do that. Fuck that. There's no way. But you know, they're talking about this now, putting in these new measures, sanctions, and limiting investment in China. How the hell is China going to reply? They're not going to sit idly by and let this go unanswered. What are they going to do? Fucking release something else from a lab? Like, I don't know. And I'm not talking out of turn here. There's some people in the United States government that's fucking saying this. I'm just reiterating what they're saying. So be aware. Something may be coming up from a lab and it will be impacting us moving forward. This is my guess. The Bank of England. And we're talking behind the scenes about Mark Carney, who was the former governor of the Bank of England. Well, we talked about them. They're shitcoining because they are going to be going ahead, it looks like, with a CBDC. They're not just doing a CBDC, Joey. Get this. They're experimenting with tokenized assets for real estate sales. The fuck is this? So it's like, I don't know. With respect to the CBDCs, I think they're going to be taking a cautious approach. They're on the retail side, they're saying that they intend to eventually get to 30,000 transactions per second as the base case, eventually getting to 100,000 transactions per second. But I don't think we're going to see a retail CBDC for quite some time. But the tokenized assets for real estate, they're saying you could use this to make a house purchase without having to have solicitors and escrow. And they're saying there's a lot of experimentation going on. I don't know about you. This is truly shitcoin stuff. Is this something that we could be using in Decentraland? I don't know. Remember Decentraland? How fucking shitty that place was? I would have asked an answer for anybody that uses a Decentraland, but nobody uses it. So it's my question when I answered. But still sticking with the UK, HSBC and Nationwide, they both imposed new restrictions on cryptocurrency purchase. This is according to listener that provided the story to me, Tall Tutor. Thank you very much, Tall Tutor. So Nationwide Banking Society, they allegedly sent an email to its customers last Thursday to inform them on restrictions of cryptocurrency purchases starting February 28th. They say the Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, who regulate the financial services industry, has highlighted certain risks associated with purchasing cryptocurrency. Daily card limit is 100 British pounds for Flex One accounts and 5,000 pounds for other current account type. So I don't know what the difference between a Flex One and another one is, but I don't know. And HSBC said from February 23rd, they're not going to be allowing their customers to purchase cryptocurrency using credit cards. So on-ramp issues are happening right now in the UK. CBDC is coming out. They're doing these fucking tokenized real estate garbage. And now it's going to be harder to buy Bitcoin through these two banks. Look out. This is going to be coming out, not just in England, but to a country near you moving forward. Let's see what we have here. Better.com, they have teamed with Amazon. They're allowing current and former employees to use Amazon stock to finance home purchases, and they're going to be using that as collateral moving forward. They say to protect itself from yes. So they say to protect itself from a continued slide in Amazon stock price, Better.com will charge a higher rate on mortgages of employees pledging stock, and they're saying that it's structured in such a way that you just have to pay more. So on the surface, this looks good, but let's be honest, this highlights a real problem with how difficult it is to purchase a home, and it's getting more difficult moving forward by the day, because house prices, they may be coming down a little bit, but the interest rates on them, they've went up drastically by percentage within the past year. So late stage fiat, I guess. Well, moving on. Biden was in Virginia this past week. I'm not sure if you heard him speaking, but he's saying that under his tenure that they reduced the debt by $1.7 trillion. I love that. $1.7 trillion. They reduced it. It's not the fucking case. It increased by around $3 trillion. So it's about a $5 trillion difference. $5 trillion.
Like the Fed's official data says that it's up. Like, what is he talking about? I don't understand this guy, man.
Well, you know, the only thing that is going up is the 30-year mortgages in the state, 7.1%. And it's the first time it's been above 7% since October 2022. So average payment on a $500,000 home in May 2021 was $2,100 a month. Now it's $3,400 a month. That's 61% increase in just less than 2 years. It's also, stats are showing that the average American is spending a record 46% of their income on house payments, almost 50% of their income. Incredible. And worse, a record 36% of Americans have more credit card debt than savings. So you have mortgages now at 7.1, credit cards could be at 25%, and you have less savings than you do credit. Man, oh man. And moving on, we could talk about new vehicle purchases. I have a chart here that's just up and to the right. Incredible. So the average new vehicle transaction price is between $46,000 and $47,000 US as of right now. That's a lot of money. But if I just go back to early 2020, before the lockdowns, the price was under $35,000. We've gone up $11,000-$12,000 in the average new vehicle transaction price in just 3 years.
Probably nothing. That's
an incredible number. So credit card, high. Mortgage payments, high. Car payments, high. Something's going to have to give. I don't know what's going to be first, but all of them are just going to fucking collapse eventually. Not sure if you saw this one, Joey. The SEC has finally approved the new ETFs. They went live just past week that track Cramer's picks. There's the inverse Cramer and the long Cramer. So SGIM is the inverse and LGIM is the long Cramer. This is meme shit that we're using financial systems that we should be looking at with.
It's a casino. These guys will tell you you need protection from crypto and Bitcoin, but you can literally go long or short what Jimmy says in the morning on MSNBC. What are we talking about? What are we talking about? That's gambling.
And to me, it kind of devalues the whole Wall Street image. You know, you expect them to meet a certain standard, and they're allowing shit like this. And on top of this, we also had the ETFs, the NANC that track Democrats and CRUZ that track the Republicans. So it's all just fucking memes now that's just being thrown on the stock market. But yet they don't want to approve a spot ETF for Bitcoin on top of that. Like,
you also saw, by the way, that the SEC, I believe it's the SEC, yeah, is talking about how in certain settings, rocket emojis and up charts, those Apple emojis constitute
financial advice.
Or the promise of financial gain based on information presented, you know, here within. What, like, these guys got a lot of time for a lot of bullshit, and they're leaving a lot of people out to dry basically everywhere else you look, right? It's really, really sad to see in the States.
It's not just sad in the States, everywhere it is, but I'm going to highlight how bad it is in the States.
Okay.
Millions of Americans nearing retirement are without savings, according to Yahoo News. About half of all Americans aged 55 to 66 have no retirement savings, according to U.S. Census data. According to U.S. Census Bureau data, 50% of women and 47% of men, so it's basically 50-50 across the gender divide between the ages of 55 and 66 have no retirement savings. Remember how many billions were sent to Ukraine to fight the war and still we're going to be piling in? But it's not just that. Those are national decisions. These are individual decisions that got people to this point. Because you can't gloss over. If you make stupid decision after stupid decision, it just compounds and now you're 65, you have no savings. The hell? But they talk about this one lady, Marianne O'Connor. She's juggling two jobs, sometimes working 11 hours per day. And this is not what she was expecting when she was to do it, like when she said that when she would reach 66. So she's 66 right now, working 11 hours, up to 11 hours, two jobs. But get this. This basically encompasses the whole thing. Quote, "I have a live for now philosophy, I guess," end quote. No fucking shit, because you have $0 in savings and you're obviously living for the day, every fucking day like that, and you have nothing. But it's not just the elderly people. They're saying U.S. millennials. They say that in their 30s, the U.S. millennials in their 30s have racked up an historic $3.8 trillion in debt.
Trillion? Just people in their 30s?
U.S. millennials in the 30s have racked up a historic $3.8 trillion in debt.
Oh, my God. So,
but, you know what? It's not – I'm going to give them a pass here. Pseudo-pass. I'll explain why. Household debt has sharply increased, particularly in one demographic group. Millennials, these are people born between 81 and 96. $3.8 trillion is the record high. It's up 27% from 2019. So in 3 years, it went up 27%. But this may not say the whole story. I'll explain why. Some of this is mortgage. That's part of the debt that's being included into this. And because of that, if they're buying into a house, it's an asset, you would expect it to go up over a long period of time. Also, they may be drawing upon it with home equity line of credit. I do not know the whole story. So the stat, when you read it, it looks really bad. But hopefully that this debt isn't debt that's just gone to go to Vegas and blow it away over there. They use it to buy something, an asset that's going to be appreciating over time. So they do have a lot of debt. So that's why I, without knowing everything, I'm going to give them a pseudo pass here. But I can't give them a pass on this one because they say credit card delinquency rates or credit card payments that are more than 90 days past due are also at its highest now amongst 30-somethings compared to other age groups. So maybe everything I said is out the windows. And the haves and has-nots, it just continues to grow. I'll just end it on this one, Joey. Not sure if you saw this. You did see this one. The Fed governor's meeting this past week, they had to close shop already. Why? Because it was bombarded with porn. Somebody, I think, was watching it or something. And number go up, and I guess other things go up too when you look at that shit. So it's a clown world everywhere, and we're living it.
It's crazy to kind of listen to some of those stats and just think that, 2 years ago, we were told by basically every policymaker, elected, unelected, and everywhere in between, that none of this was going to happen. None of it. There's going to be no additional debt taken on. There's going to be no inflation. There's going to be no problems with the housing market. What do we see instead? It's insane. It's insane. Where I believe U.S. federal debt now is, it's more than 100% of GDP, which is nuts. I'm looking at a few other charts here. First-time homebuyers, this is in Bloomberg, according to the National Association of Realtors. First-time homebuyers, their worst affordability levels since 1986. You remember what happened after that. If you ask people using the airplane analogy, the soft landing analogy, what they think is going to happen, soft landing, hard landing, no landing, or crash full speed into the side of a mountain, you get only about 35%, 39%, something like that, saying soft landing, about 5% giving that crash full speed into the side of a mountain answer, which is interesting. All this is interesting clown world stuff, but I want to talk about CBDCs. And I know this is a sort of a pet topic of yours that you particularly enjoy. There's a former Biden economic advisor who, speaking to senators on Tuesday, said that the Biden administration was actively pursuing a CBDC to, quote, crowd out private cryptocurrencies that enable ransomware and sanctions violations. Ooh. How's this? The Federal Reserve would have to issue and manage the digital dollar, and at least one of the board members, Christopher Waller, is openly opposed to the idea. Singh, that's the former director there, Daleep Singh, addressed crypto in response to questions from, guess who, Elizabeth Warren, who argued Tuesday that cryptocurrencies are being used to hold U.S. businesses for ransom. It's being used to evade American sanctions. It's being used to enrich America's adversaries. We've got to stop helping these guys by letting crypto go unchecked. They're making a move on this sooner than either of us think, I believe. And I would expect to see some announcement about why they're doing this and how close they are. I'm going to say it here tonight, before the end of this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they're close. Because I look at the other stuff you're saying there about no one has any savings, entitlements are falling apart, debt is too high, no one's got any hope. This is a perfect sort of boilerplate for CBDC rollout. And America's got all the tech in the world to be able to do this at the retail level. Everyone's got a phone. Everyone's got a computer. Everyone's got a tap card. All the stores are equipped with this stuff already. It's not going to take much more to push this over the top. And I don't know if it's going to be immediately Orwellian, but it'll get there, of course. And one of the reasons they're going to give, Len, is because they want to crowd out cryptocurrencies. They may not say it like that. They may not phrase it as we're afraid of this thing and it's clear the dollar is failing. But I think that this is closer than either of us believe at the moment. And it's not good. I'm not happy about that. But looking at the actions here, looking at the shortcomings in standards of living, really, more than anything else, like, I don't know what else you would call this. But, it's not a good situation. I'll leave you with one stat. You tell me what you make of this. It's been about 1 year since the first rate hike in March 2022. Okay. The last time rates stayed high for longer than this was 2007. And that was for 15 months. So we're about 3 months away from the sort of the most recent long period, the longest period where rates stayed elevated like this. Do you think we go over 15 months with rates at this level, or do you think we start seeing cuts in the summertime, maybe early fall?
If nothing happens, if there's no external factors, I think they're going to maintain this high level of rate. If there's going to be a war that drags other countries into it and potentially the US, that's going to dig a half to lower rates. So to me, that's my prediction. The war, a war that involves the United States, is one that's going to be forcing their hand to lower interest rates because they're going to spend money hand over fist, which they already have been doing now, but it'll just accelerate that. Without that, I think they're going to maintain this level for several months, maybe the end of the year or longer.
You think, eh?
And I almost think that they're even going to raise rates a little bit more. And I know it's given that how much it's costing to service debt. About a year and change ago, I will say January 2022, both you and I were scratching our heads to say there's no way they're going to raise rates. Maybe once, twice. They did it fucking many, many times. And if I can went from 0.25 to 4.25, what is that? That's a huge jump. And none of us would have predicted that in January 2022. So I could see that they may want to continually increase rates just given what's happened in the past 12 months. Not it's going to be like another 3-5%. It's going to be minuscule, maybe another 0.25 or 0.5 in total. That's my guess. So that's a long way to answer your question. They're going to keep these rates for some time, many, many months, unless there's an external factor that's causing them to lower rates earlier.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I have no additional comment.
We're good. And so to go back, and you're talking about CBDCs, and the one thing that they could do before they even institute a retail CBDCs is just like they're doing in England, they could make the on-ramps into Bitcoin more difficult. And right. They could say you can't use credit cards or accounts.
Credit cards here, and I believe in America, already treat crypto purchases as cash advances.
Do they really?
They do here for sure. Coinbase had to announce, this is like back in 2018, they started doing this line. Coinbase sent out like a notice that Canadian customers using credit cards to buy they'd be treated like cash advances. So whatever the rate is on that, 15 or 20% or whatever, like immediately. Yeah. So, if you want to buy it, you can, but it costs you 20% the second you click buy. I would guess the States does that as well. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like there's good and bad there. People do need to fucking give their head a shake if they're buying crypto or whatever, even Bitcoin on credit card, like is a dumb idea. I think that's, it started. I don't know if it's going to get to the point where it is in the UK, over here in the States anytime soon, but directionally it's going all one way, right? There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and they could do it under the guise of consumer protection. Not the fact that they're seeing that their currency itself would be basically mothballed and Bitcoin will take its place over a period of time. And they could just say, oh, it's user protection. We're here to help the little guy and all that shit. We could read between the lines. We know what's really out there. But with respect to a CBDC, it's a real technical challenge to roll it out at a large scale on a retail. And it has to work because you just can't have it work half-ass where you even have intermittent periods of downtime. It has to work 100% of the time. How many times do you go out there, use your debit card or your Visa card or whatever, and it works? And the times it doesn't work, which I guess it has happened in the past because
very rarely, though. You're right.
But people like are up in arms and what the fuck's going on? You have to match that level of uptime because that's the standard they have to achieve. And I don't know, I don't know the technical challenges at all of them, but I don't think they have achieved that level of uptime with any sort of like CBDC and massive amounts of transactions per second. I don't know. I think they're a while away. It's going to be used more so for transaction from bank to bank or institution to institution.
Like that's what everyone says. It's going to be for these bigger balance sheets, but I don't know, man. Like I don't see why they would roll that out there. Right. It doesn't benefit governments to roll it out at that level. Like no one, like if they're really looking to make this a surveillance token, and I'm not saying they're not, I think that's probably part of the plan, right? It's obviously a little easier to do behavioral nudging this way. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they would roll it out at that level and not at the retail level. Like, because it doesn't have to be broadly adopted the first time. you just have to get, like, you know, the people on social assistance. What did we say before? Or Len, like in Canada, how many people work for public administration, municipal, provincial, or federal? If all those people have to start taking part of their check in Fed coin or BOC coin or TIF coin, whatever they call it, that's what, 10% of the population? What was that number? It was 300,000.
Oh, it was higher than that. That's a good way to adopt it.
Or 1%, sorry, 1%. So, you know, like you get those people and their families, and after that, like you're rolling, right? It doesn't have to happen all at once. The more important thing than the rollout to people who are using it is that vendors are able to accept it. And so where are they going to start? They're not going to start at Foot Locker. They'll start at Fortino's. They'll start at Sobeys. They'll start at, you know, like one of the good things about oligopolies from the government's point of view is you can just get all of them in one net pretty easily and say, okay, from here on out, you got to accept this token. 1% of people are going to have this starting next month. You have to take it. And that's it. It's not going to be that hard. And
no, forcing the people to, no way, it's not that hard.
Yeah, it's not gonna be that hard. I don't know if the technical, you know, I keep on hearing that there's like shortcomings in technical competence at the highest levels of government that would make this difficult, maybe, but I mean, also, you know, do they care that much about uptime if it's just part of the ecosystem? Maybe not right away. They work out the kinks. I don't know. I'm thinking in my head, like, how long can you afford to delay this if you're one of these governments? Well, can you afford to wait past $100,000 Bitcoin? You think you can?
I'm just nodding in with your saying. Maybe you're saying it's an inevitability that it's going to be rolled out. I'm saying that it's within the realm of possibility. It's not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. It looks like it will happen, but still, we have to see the proof of concept before we actually see this thing rolled out. Why would we be done with institutions and, you know, country to country? It would just make things easier. It's more seamless when having money sent to, you know, from bank to bank or country to country. And ultimately then, if money is sent to a bank, it's kind of lost and it could go anywhere, to even to an enemy state. But in this case, it can't, because then the central bank, the Fed, can basically nullify anything that ends up in, say, Russia. All US dollars end up in Russia, CBDC. Right. And they can say, screw you, you're not going to. So it's one way to prevent your enemy from using your currency. I don't know if that's something they want to do. I'm just spitballing here, but I don't know. I think we're still a while away. We'll see. The UK is probably going to be the testing case. It looks like they're the ones first.
They're the furthest ahead. Yeah, I think so.
And they're the most willing of Western nations.
India has this already, right? I think they've already started doing this too.
India, Japan, China.
Yeah.
So it's Nigeria. So yeah. It's not like this is a one-off. There are other examples. But let's move on to Clown World North, Joey. Mm-hmm. And a lot of talk with, you know, rising interest rates and trigger rates that were hit. And one question comes to mind is, why haven't price of homes come down as a result? Because when you hit the trigger point, people must be.
We know why. Them. We know why.
Yes, we do. And I'm just going to highlight it in case others don't. Because while one chartered bank this past week released stats, 27% of their mortgage holders with that bank have amortization rates of 35 years or more. Or more! It doesn't specify. They're saying more.
CIBC and BMO will let you extend your amortization period, I'm pretty sure.
A lot. TD as well. TD has...
TD, CIBC, and BMO, I'm pretty sure, are the three big banks that will let you...
Oh, gotcha. Sorry, I didn't hear it. Yeah. And so basically, you know, when you get to these levels of amortization rates, you're not lowering down the principal. It's just all interest payments. A lot of it is interest payments. Check this one out. An article from the Globe and Mail. One-fifth of CIBC mortgage borrowers seeing loan balances grow because of higher interest rates. Well, nothing really concerning there, I guess. But CIBC shows that $52 billion, with a B, worth of mortgages, equivalent to about 20% of the bank's $263 billion residential loan portfolio, were in a position where the borrower's monthly payment was not high enough to cover even the interest portion of the loans. So $52 billion worth of mortgages are not able to meet the interest rates of interest portion of the loans. That's up $263 billion total of the residential loan portfolio. Then we have commercial and industrial loan portfolios, which are much, much higher. Remember, $263 billion. CABC's market cap is only $57 billion. Do you not see the fucking problem here? If this thing goes tits up, it's easy to do.
Their loan books are souring. I know.
Right? This is not the only one. I don't want to, like, every other bank is in the same fucking position. It's all because of the variable mortgages. People love this. And even I had it for a period of time.
I still have one. I still have a variable mortgage.
You have no choice.
But my mortgage is like a little business on air, okay? For people who are in variable rate mortgages, you have to have like exceedingly large majority of your home paid off, okay? The value of your home. You cannot have a variable rate mortgage where you're one of these people who, when you sign the mortgage, you're at 50% of your household income. You can't, because that's when you get into trouble. I know for my wife and I, you know, we had a lot of money saved up. We got a little bit of help from our parents too, which we had to pay back, but whatever, that's fine. And, you know, over the course of a few years, the loan you have against the house, you know, it's just not that big. You know, you're paying $1,000 a month or whatever. I think we were down to like 900 or something during COVID. The rates got so low. And so now it's a little higher than that, but we didn't overextend. The people you're talking about, right, in these loans that are going to sour, amortization periods that go to 50 years or whatever they go to, or whatever they can go to, because I don't think we've seen the end of that practice. These people were at 46% when they signed, right? They signed at 3% or 2%, and now they're at what? 5, 4.5? What's the prime rate now?
It's four and a half, right?
So four and a half. So you probably get prime plus a point, basically, right? Or plus half a point. So you get 5%. Your mortgage payment's gone from, you know, 1,500 to $3,000, basically, right? And by the way, it's all interest. Like you probably can't afford that. And the reason, I don't know if you're going to bring this up or not, but the reason that you're not going to see a big drop in housing prices is because there's too many people on the sideline who couldn't get in before. And as houses have to be sold through forced sales, what you get is people selling for less than the ticket value, right? And you can debate about whether or not true market value is the sale price or what people are forced to sell for. I don't know. But, you know, there's too many people on the sideline. We've talked about the problems with bringing tons of immigrants in every year as it relates to the housing market. And, you know, we're not the only people who are talking about this. So the housing market won't fall. I would argue, and maybe you're going to say this, I don't want to step on your toes too much, so I'll stop after this and pass it back. But the thing I would say is the government knows the housing market cannot collapse. It's the only thing that matters to most Canadians. That's it. That's the whole story. They can't let it collapse. And so people can say, there's a story here from CIBC's, Scotia's CEO, talking about how the Bank of Canada is going to have to raise to keep up with the Federal Reserve. You know, maybe they should, but they're not going to. There's no world in which they'll let the housing market crash to such a point that Canadians are out of their retirement fund or out of house and home. Like they won't allow it to happen. Everything else they do points to that desired outcome. And so this idea that they're going to keep raising and push people out of their homes, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. That's why I think the housing market is going to stabilize at some point here. I don't know where exactly. We can ask Steve Suretsky that in a couple of weeks, too. Yeah. But anyway, keep going.
Well, Dave Bacon was saying that in the U.S. they have a 50-year amortization.
50-year?
But one smart fellow is saying in Japan it's 100-year. It looks. And by the way, the chat is rocking. Thank you very much for everybody.
100 years? You're never going to – like you're just a slave your whole life to your fucking mortgage. Like how can you – because you can't – you can't retire if you have to keep paying your mortgage. Do people realize this? Like, it's going to be hard to retire if you have to keep paying your mortgage. This
if
is
you
problem.
Walk in at the age of 7 or 8, and if you manage to get to 110, you could have 3 full years of mortgage-free living.
People are living longer, Len. You never know.
Yeah. So anyways, going back, the negatively amortized mortgage, the fourth quarter of last year, that number stood at $39 billion. Now, the first quarter right now, it's $52 billion. So it's gone up significantly in just a very short period of time. And you talked about, will Canada let this thing collapse? There's a significant amount of real estate that's captured within the GDP, and it makes up a large percentage of it. It's very important to Canada's economy as a whole. So much is tied to it. So it goes to show you, is it a strong and healthy economy? I guess as long as the real estate sector and oil and gas is running strong, but if those two are not, man, then it's really problematic. And in terms of the data that we have available, CMHC, they've been revising their data for credit delinquencies. They've been doing so for the last 6 months because Q3 2022, they still haven't released it. They're saying the data is currently unavailable as it's currently under review. So CMHC is not giving us information as late as Q3 2023. There's something there that they don't want us to fucking know. And just, anyways, I got even more news that makes me bullish. More news that makes me bullish on Bitcoin. And starting April 1st, BC is going to be the first jurisdiction in Canada to make prescription contraception free to all residents, including pills, injections, implants, and other devices. And so all residents over there will be able to get it. $119 million of money they don't have that's going to be spent over the next 3 years. They're saying, the province saying, for a person who pays $25 a month in hormonal pills, the new free plan could save them as much as $10,000 in a lifetime. Now, I did the math. $25, it's around $300 a year. To get to $10,000, that's 33 years you're using fucking the pill. That's a lot of fucking... I don't know how many people are using it for...
Do you even have... Like, is there even 33 years between your first childbearing year and menopause?
I would say it's a challenge at best.
Okay.
And I'm being
you and me, we're kind of talking out of turn here, but I don't want to get any shit, but it seems to me to be a long time, right? But I'm pretty sure it's a long time.
The one good thing about this, though, I mean, if now they're going to be giving up free contraception, like the pill and so forth, the rubber industry, instead of sending fucking materials over for condoms, they could send it over for making tires. So maybe we'll get a discount moving forward for a set of four tires moving. That's maybe the only saving grace from all this. I do not know. April 1st, another date, the same date that we're talking about for the contraception, but there's going to be the tax that's going to be implemented on beer and spirits in Canada moving forward. I'm going to eat crow here because I was wrong. The sale of beer and wine by volume has seen historic declines in Canada. I thought it would have been the opposite given what's transpiring with the economy. People would be drowning their sorrows with beer and liquor and so forth. But the sales is up by dollar, but by volume it's down, which is very interesting. And it's the first decline seen since basically 2013, 2014. But the decline could also be contributed to the fact that the pandemic is, when people are now working in the office less from home. So maybe they were drinking more during that time. So as a result, just it had to go down because you can't maintain that level of drinking. But anyways, I don't know what the fuck's going on. It just seems funny that they're looking at this and saying it's a good thing.
Time to drink when you got to have three jobs, Len. Like, that's really the story, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Like, well, first, before we get there, Nordstrom, they'll be closing all their Canadian stores. They're cutting 2,500 jobs in the process. They open up.
Did they blow up? They blew up their... Oh, Nordstrom. Oh, Nordstrom,
yeah. Okay. Not the VPN. No.
What about Nordstream? Nordstream.
If they want to sponsor us, we'll talk turkey with them. But Nordstrom, no. This is a luxury store that sells luxury goods, and they opened up much fanfare in 2016. But now they operate 6 stores and 7 racks in Canada. Well, it's now going to be done. So nobody could afford these luxury products. Why? Well, it must be because people are spending money to buy these Ukraine sovereign bonds. Remember, these are the 5-year, $500 million bonds issued in November 2022. 3.245% rate of return. Fantastic rate of return if you want to send money over to Ukraine. But anyways, check this out. This is the more late-stage fiat. It's a result of more jobs. You were just talking about this. I'll give you some color to this one. A survey conducted by H&R Block found that 44% of Canadians, they are doing gig work, and they are going to take the risk of not claiming that income on this tax season as the cost of living continues to rise. So for 74% of these Canadian gig workers, these are the kinds of job in addition to their primary source of income. So they looks like they just need this to make ends meet. And 44% of those people, well, they're not even going to fucking claim it, it looks like, according to the survey. So it's money that won't be collected by the federal government. There you go. So they're working more than one job, unofficially. Because you'll never be able to capture this on the record books. But that's fucked up, man. People are going to just risk it and just try to say, fuck you, CRA. I'm not going to claim it.
It's funny. In the chat here, Chuck is saying, remember that guy we showed the video of, the guy who's like, you can't handle the tooth, talking about the new beer and liquor drink guidance?
Yeah, that was last week.
So it was a couple weeks ago. So Chuck talking PsyOps here. They front-running people not being able to afford beer by lowering the recommendation for consumed alcohol so they can say that the guidance was the cause and not the beer. And so, Len, this begs the question. Was that fat guy in front of the liquor store a PSYOP? Did we get PSYOP by that guy?
Maybe
he's a spook.
Maybe.
I can't believe it.
I never thought of this in that way.
We got rugged. That guy rugged all of us. I can't believe that. So, okay. I just want to say one thing here, okay? Maybe two things. Ben Rabideau, who is a good follow on Twitter and who I still want to come on this program. He won't return my calls. The CPI, the annual change in mortgage interest cost in Canada's CPI is the largest since the data started being collected in the 90s. CPI mortgage interest costs 20% of the CPI basket right now. A lot, okay? But worse, here's the thing that I want you to think about, okay? When everyone is saying, and we talked about this last week, this Galen Weston thing, he's going on stage, when is it, Wednesday or something, they're all going there. They're going to talk about the reason they've raised prices. And the Bank of Canada is telling you that inflation is kind of coming under control. It's starting to roll over. They're pausing, blah, blah, blah. Sylvain Charlebois, the food professor on Twitter, has a great, great chart here about the gap between food inflation and general inflation around the world. Do you know how much higher food inflation is in Canada than the official CPI right now?
20% higher.
4.5%. We're about middle.
Is that low? I thought it would be way higher.
4.5 is still pretty high, right?
But if you look at the price of meat, the price of eggs, everything's gone up way more.
Food inflation probably is a lot of industrial sludge and synthetic products, right? Like, it's more mini wheats than Wagyu, I would guess. Both of which
Wagyu's been pretty stable. I'll have to say that.
Well, you know what I mean. And so, like, when they ask this guy Galen, who, by the way, I am not a simp for, okay? I don't care what happens with Loblaw. The guy's making money. Like, I don't know. How much is too much money for this guy to make? What's the margin? Like, I was talking about last week, my conversation with my buddy Al. Like, what is the margin where it's gouging? I don't know. But I don't think this is it, okay? The questions they're going to ask him are going to be, well, why are you charging so much? Inflation is going up, blah, blah, blah. I would just say, look, man, this is the data. The inflation number only tells you half the story, okay? The food price is basically double what the inflation number is. You guys are saying inflation is 5 or 6%. We're saying it's 10% for food, 4.5% more. And this is the end of the story. There's like this narrative that we can't make any money. These guys who are providing essential products are being villainized for this. I don't know about you, Len. I barely ever watch like QP. I don't watch most like Canadian politics stuff. But if I can find that hearing, I'm going to watch it for sure, because I think Weston is a smart guy and I know he's going to be well prepared. And there's a lot of this stuff that's public on Twitter. I am sure that they follow Sylvain Charlebois' commentary, and I want to hear what he says. I think he's going to take it to the Jagmeet Singhs of the world and just lay them to waste, right? Put him 6 feet under. That's it. There's not going to be any more questions about this, okay? There's not going to be an opportunity for politicians to spin this in a way that makes them look like heroes, when really what is the case? You know, like people are saying in the chat, like I said last week, the profits are garbage in grocery, right? I showed you the chart last week, the difference between Pfizer and Loblaw when it comes to profit margins during COVID. Like, one of those companies is gouging for sure. I just don't think it's the one who's selling the apples and oranges. That's all.
You know what? I'm one of the few people I think that do watch Question Period. I watched it today as well, but I only watched the first little bit because that's the most fun. And I just want to get a gauge of what everybody is saying, so at least I understand. And I could talk a little bit with confidence when I could talk about Canadian politics. So I'm one of the few, I guess, that watches it. With respect to this inquiry that's going on, not the inquiry, the Weston thing that's going to be taking place Wednesday.
It's not today. Just him either. It's a couple of them, right? Things are two CEOs. But he's the guy who's always on TV. So
The questions are going to be leading, though. That's the one thing. They're not going to be open-ended questions. They're going to be asking a leading question that's going to potentially have a yes or no answer. So they will not have an opportunity to add anything. And as you say, bury them 6 feet under, because there's going to be no opportunity for the most part. That's what I'm thinking. They're smart enough to not give them that much leash, and they'll just keep them under wraps. And with respect, and I talked about it last week, unless there's collusion going on, the free market should take care of everything.
Yeah.
If you're going to save a few bucks just by driving an extra minute or two, you'll probably do it, especially for a family of four. The savings could be significant if you could find savings. So capitalism and the free market should basically solve itself. And if things cost a lot, well, they just do because of external issues. It's not them trying to gouge. It's they're selling it because it cost a lot of money for them to get their hands in initially. Whatever. Let's just move on.
Don't forget, like, again, not to rag on this, but you know, we're also trying to like penalize farmers for being polluters. We're nuking fertilizer operations. We're telling people they have to dump extra milk that's past quota, you know, production quotas. We don't like this. There's people who care about the price of groceries and people who want to seem like they care about the price of groceries. And I am sure that a lot of people are in that camp of people who just want to pretend they care. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of them are, you know, I hate to say it, but elected officials. And it's popular to have that stance right now because people are feeling pain. But as usual, the less popular path, right, where you explain to people why and how and what we should do to fix it is completely, you know, untarnished. There's no footprints on that path. The grass is growing on that path. We can't keep doing this, man. It's bad for society to continue to go down this path where everyone just gets the convenient lie all the time. It's not what we need. And we need people in power who can make those difficult decisions and have those difficult conversations with the electorate. A problem we're not going to be able to solve tonight, but just some food for thought. No pun intended.
Shake, pay, earn is done. And
yeah.
It ended just this past week. So if you had any Canadian balance on ShakePay, they paid it out on the day that they stopped the EARN program. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday last week. I could be wrong on the date. And I'm just speaking, this is just my speculation. I have no inside knowledge about this, and I'm just trying to connect dots with what little information I have. I suspect this is as a result of the Canadian Securities Administration. They basically handed out a notice to all exchanges within Canada to stay compliant. They had to meet these set of obligations. They had 30 days to do so, or unless they're going to be going rogue in Canada. And I think ShakePay looked at this and decided this might be a yield type product that they just don't want to deal with it, and they don't want to piss off regulators. And as a result, they decided to shelve the program. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. Poke holes in my argument. I'd love to hear what anybody else thinks about it. And maybe you have some ideas. Maybe I'm fucked up with my opinion here, Joey, and you could shoot me down from my high spot.
I don't think you're wrong. I think it's a good move from ShakePay, honestly. They're taking a lot of grief on Twitter. I see some red flags in the chat here too when you brought that story. Maybe, I don't know. ShakePay is a friend of this show. They sponsored us for a long time. They may sponsor us again at some point. I don't know. And I look at that operation and what do I see? I see good people. You and I did a panel for them, Len, and there's a lot of Bitcoin maximalists on staff in the C-suite looking to drive that company in a direction that's good for Bitcoin. And I think you're right. I think the compliance angle is big. I know they have a focus on compliance because they've reallocated staffing power to operations and positions that are going to look to push Canadian politicians in a direction and Canadian regulators in a direction that's friendly to Bitcoin and friendly to their operation. Of course, it's self-serving, but ultimately, you know, we're all holding the same bags here and want to see this move forward. You can't have an extra hurdle to overcome when you're talking to regulators that you're not compliant because of a yield product. I don't know how much that yield product was important to them. You know, I do know when we talked to Carlo, when they launched that product back in the fall, that he said, you're paying that out of pocket, right? There was no rehypothecation. It was part of their marketing budget, basically, is what he said. And that's fine. Even better, right? But there's complications that come with that as the clamps start to come down on these products and as people start looking at what's a security, what's not a security, what needs to be regulated, what doesn't need to be regulated. And I just think you got a good thing going over there. Why jeopardize it with a product that you're paying for out of pocket anyway? It's not probably making you any money. I don't know what it did for customer retention or time in the app or anything like that, but I think it's a good move overall. Do you agree? It sounds like you agree it's a good move overall.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I'm not shitting on it. It was something that just so recently rolled out. It's not like people are tied to the hip for this. Oh, I'm a ShakePay user because of this. I think that the shaking for sats is probably the thing that hooks them the easiest, and that's the one that keeps more people signing up and keep them on their platform.
Sure,
if they're buying with as a result of, I don't know, they don't only know internally if that's the case, but this the ShakePay Earn, I think it was just something that was on the side, and it was nice to have, and obviously it's something that had long life, so we'll see if it ever comes back. I don't know.
I don't know if it will either. Did you see, I posted a picture of some of my old shakes from 2019, 21,000 sats a shake.
Yeah. Yeah. Good days.
What a time. What a time to be alive. Anyway.
So last Canadian story I have, I'm just going to talk about this really quick. ETH Toronto is coming up August 13th to 16th. I'd love to go there. Joey, I don't think you want to. If any listeners,
I am not going.
I'm not going to go inside. I want to interview people on the outside, and I'd love to do it. If anybody wants to hold a camera for me, let me know. That would be a fantastic opportunity just to troll the people outside there entering. So there's also going to be the first ever ETH Woman Hackathon taking place over there. I'm not sure if you could identify as a woman, you could be eligible to join.
Unbelievable.
In, but we'll see.
We cannot go down this path every week. We are going to get demonetized, canceled.
They, you know what? In the world of sports,
they just allowed, I know, Olympic weightlifters, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I am just reading what's out there. I'm not, that's you right. know. So anyways,
that's right.
That's it for the news. Transition to the Bitcoiner and no coiners segment of the show. And I do happen to have, for the first time in a long time, one of each.
Okay, you go, because I don't have one of either. I've been busy. And I thought I was getting sick yesterday. I went to a campfire on Saturday night. And honestly, yesterday I woke up, I thought I was getting sick. And I kind of still feel like I have a bit of a raspy voice, but I feel better now. But anyway, all that to say that I don't have either one. So please, the floor is all yours, sir.
Okay, so my Bitcoiner is, and I don't know the name or names of who the Bitcoiner is, but it's the people at Health Canada and the people specifically that were involved in this decision. A company by the name of Adastra Labs, traded under the ticker XTRX, Canadian exchange, and it's a leading cannabis company. They received approval from Health Canada on February 17th, 2023, for this amendment to include cocaine as a substance that the company can legally possess, produce, sell, and distribute. The dealer license also allows Adastra to possess up to 1,000 grams of psilocybin and
mushrooms. Mushrooms.
Oh, obviously, I have no fucking clue what the
psilocybin is. Mushrooms.
So there you go. So up to 1,000 grams. In terms of the size, it's rather small. They said the amended license, they could interact with up to 250 grams of cocaine and import coca leaves to manufacture and synthesize the substance. So really small numbers, but the slippery slope. Once you allow a little bit, eventually it's going to be 100 times, and then it just, you know, inflation takes in and just keep adding zeros. Remember, in British Columbia, there is a three-year exemption under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act for adults 18 years and older to possess 2.5 grams of opioid, cocaine, meth, MDMA, and other combination of their between from January 31st, 2023 and January 31st, 2026. So this is the slide of the downfall of the economy. To allow a company the ability to produce cocaine and then allow residents of BC in order to consume it, I love it. Because people involved in this, I would assume, are not the most productive individuals. I look at, I'm just looking at people in, like, when they took the videos of in Philadelphia and other areas of the United States, you see people walking around like zombies. They're not out there working the fucking plants. They're not out there working Wall Street. They're just consuming. They fucking produce absolutely nothing. And you are adding to the fucking level of people that produce absolutely nothing. I love this because this is the downfall of society in a Canadian dollar. And that's why the people at Health Canada, whoever approved this decision, is my Bitcoiner of the week, accelerating the downfall of the Canadian dollar. I love it.
I just want to add that, it's going to be hard to roll up a CBDC to enjoy a now legal nose beer off your coffee table. So I don't know if they get rid of cash, like how am I supposed to, you know, just go skiing? It's going to be difficult, is it not?
That's
someone
true.
Someone in the chat can tell me. Because Chuck was saying, if a cop pulls you over now, they'll confiscate your straw, leave your Coke behind.
But so, it's a paper straw. Remember, it's not plastic anymore. So I'm not sure. The chemical reaction between paper and these substances, who knows? These are things that are just beyond me. I don't know. My no coiner of the week, and I'm going to name them Angus Reid Institute. The whole institute itself is truly a fucking no coiner.
Tell people who Angus Reid is. Everyone, Canadians should know. If you don't know, and if you're Canadian, you don't know, you should know by now who they are.
Well, they do polls upon polls, just about everything. Primarily it's politics, but they delve into just about anything. And the anything part is really why they're my no coiner of the week. They're one of prominent pollsters out there. I guess Nanos would be the other one in Canada, and probably a few others. But Angus Reid Institute, they did a poll recently, and the results of this poll can be used by anybody out there that wants to push a UBI agenda. Because in this poll that was done in the past few months, one of the questions was asked that if people would pay 1 to 2% more in income taxes towards a universal basic income in Canada of $40,000 per year. I don't know how the fuck anybody could pay 1 or 2%, and as a result of that minuscule taxes, $40,000 would be paid out in universal basic income. I have no, but and they were saying as a result, 47% of Canadians would be supportive of this. Of course, if you ask me if I'd be supportive of paying 5% tax so I could retire at the age of 16, I'd do it for sure. But it's a pipe dream to say you could pay 1 or 2% and pay people $40,000. It doesn't add up. In fact, I did some quick back of the math, napkin math. If you're going to pay 1 million people UBI. Canada has 38 million people in Canada. So we'll say 1 million people that are going to be getting UBI. So a small number. $40,000 given to those million people. That's $40 billion that's going to be fucking handed out. That's 1/10 of all the fucking revenue Canada collects in a year.
Ah, whatever.
It does not make sense to me. So the question they asked does not capture the total cost in a UBI. And it was just pipe fantasy, just a dream. So because of that, and now every UBI pro guy out there say, I love it, and this shows that people would like to have UBI. The math doesn't make sense. So Angus Reid Institute is my fucking no-coiner of the week.
This is a great example of, and Nanos does this too. Nanos is like maybe the worst for these leading questions. Like they know the answer they want to get before they ask the question, right? Which is what good pollsters do. When they're contracted by the government, which is often the case. So I would just say that if you look at the question and the answer, what does that tell you about people's understanding of like basic mathematics, basic financial literacy? It's at
in
zero.
1 year?
Oh, yeah. It's at zero. Every person who said yes to that is a zero on the mathematical literacy scale. A zero. This is unsustainable, man. We talked about like decay, and I have that thread going on Twitter. But man, I'll tell you, looking at that should worry you as a Canadian. These people are going to be paying into your retirement. They're going to ask for your money at 1% or 2% more, which, by the way, it's never going to be only 1%, because one, as Len mentioned, you can't afford it. And two, 1% is always just a wedge in the door, right? Nothing ever stays at 1%. Everything only goes one direction. And I would just caution people, man, that's a real signpost that you had that much support for something that's very clearly, you know, impossible. It's impossible to do. It's not even like it's difficult or a mountain you have to climb or there's just a few kinks to work out. It's impossible. The population is growing every year by 500,000 people. It's impossible to do this. We can't do it. And people think it's doable 1%. You got to be nuts. You got
to
be nuts.
Yeah, no, it's impossible to fund it at the level they think it is. Realistically, you'd have to increase taxation for businesses and individuals by double digits. And I don't know the exact number, but it would be a significant amount in order to fund it. And so it's revenue neutral. And it's just impossible to do without suffering some real economic hardship, because people would quote pitchforks and fucking torches and say enough is enough. But that's it, Joey. That's it.
Good show. I really appreciate everyone sticking around in the chat. We got more in the after show here. The price of Bitcoin in US dollars, $22,463. Green for the day. The day just started officially on the chart, but green for the day.
Slight pump. And the $30,596 in Canadian dollars. And if you look at the price of Bitcoin, it's been flat for 4 days now, I think. Just flat. It hasn't moved much for 200 bucks. Really, right? Yeah. I love it. This is what you want, stability in the price of Bitcoin. I'd rather have stability at six figures, but I'll take it just about anywhere. I don't want the wild swings, because then you could eliminate all that garbage about how volatile the price of Bitcoin is. Let's just build a base and just move up from there.
Hey, I got one more thing to pump. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here. I didn't ask if we can announce this, but Mark Jeftovic, Bomb Thrower, is going on the Karadza show tomorrow. Mm. And I can't wait to see it. I honestly, Len, if I'm not busy tomorrow, I might go down there and spectate and throw stones from outside the room or something.
Well, and if you're going to do it, you might as well use Fountain to listen into that. I'm going to just throw another thing out there. I mean, why not? I mean, I use it as my primary app for listening to podcasts. I'm collecting Satoshis for doing it, but also streaming sats to other podcasts that have the ability to collect sats. That's my way to contribute to those people that create, but also the circular economy. Let's keep this going, because you collect Bitcoin, spend Bitcoin, don't hoard it. At least if you have some sats, zap it or stream it away.
Agreed, my brother. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Wednesday with Bitcoin Island. Stick around for the after show. Come to YouTube for that if you're on the audio.
Take care. And PB.